This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And last week I played a track by Henry Flint, that's F-L-Y-N-T, from a CD called Graduation and Other New Country and Blues Music. And the particular track, which is about 10 minutes long, got a sort of favourable response or favourable feedback from a couple of people. So this has steered me back in the direction of Henry Flint, who I interviewed. He played at the Cafe Oto in 2008, and he was playing his version of new country blues at Cafe Oto. Which I think alienated a few people in the audience. I don't know if it's what they were expecting. But he's after that concert or gig, I approached him and asked if I could do an interview with him. And we met up in Soho. And this interview was broadcast on Resonance, in fact, in 2008, 10 years ago. So I have been steered back to this. Henry Flint is an intriguing character, an eccentric Trotskyist, Fluxus artist, and George Matunas, who was one of the key figures in Fluxus, came under the influence of Henry Flint, described as an ultra-Trotskyist, who denounced all forms of European art music, including Fluxus, as it happens, as degenerate and cultural imperialism. Alan Kaprow, author of The Blurring of Art and Life, had arranged as part of Charlotte Moorman's series of avant-garde festivals to do Stockhausen's Original. Many friends of Kaprow were invited to participate. Matunas loathed Moorman, whom he considered an opportunist, and Flint loathed Stockhausen for strange ideological reasons which were intelligible to nobody but himself and perhaps Matunas. Matunas now announced that anyone that participated in that performance could no longer be considered part of Fluxus. The day of the concert arrived, and the result was that some of the Fluxus performers had to pass through a picket line of the other Fluxus artists who were denouncing the performance as cultural imperialism. This was grossly embarrassing, and it discouraged much of the camaraderie of the earlier times of Fluxus forever, according to Dick Higgins. And a more lengthy description of this event is printed in Fluxus Experience by Hannah Higgins. This all took place in 1964, by the way. Henry Flint, eccentric Trotskyist, he coined the term concept art in 1961. But again, there is controversy over this, as conceptual artists don't really think of concept art as being the same thing. For reasons I don't quite understand. What I'm going to do is play the whole of the interview, which was first broadcast in 2008, in which Henry Flint, for the most part, talks about abstract film, which he had become interested in as a result of his connection with Tony Conrad and his brother Dan Conrad. So we'll play the whole of that. It starts, in fact, this programme from 2008, which will last about 20 minutes, starts with something from Henry Flint's album called Raga Electric, Experimental Music. And it's quite extreme version of what, I don't know, you can't even call it sound poetry, but anyway, you'll get the picture soon enough. These four very short tracks are called Central Park Transverse Vocal, numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, all dating from 1963. Hello, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. Those tracks were by Henry Flint from Raga Electric Experimental Music 1963 to 1971. Those tracks are all from 1963, called Central Park Transverse Vocal, numbers 1, 2, 3 and 4. Henry Flint played at the Café Otto in Hackney on the 19th of October, playing his own brand of sort of avant-garde hillbilly music. And after the event, I was able to catch up with him and record this interview with him talking about abstract film.
Abstract film. You have your ideas on abstract film, which I'm personally very interested in. Mm-hmm.
When I was young, in my teens, I mean, I had the idea, which of course was not original at all, that abstract film would be a natural extrapolation of painting. And I mean, at that time, I thought there was no reason why it would not become more important than painting, or would not dominate, you know, relative to painting. At that point, I didn't have either the means nor the the will, you know, to follow up on that. I may have dabbled slightly with film in the 60s, but, you know, it was completely insignificant. At that point, I mean, I saw some work which I respect today and also a certain amount of work which I don't respect. I mean, I saw the early films of the Conrad brothers, which I think are important for the, you know, the technical pioneering.
Right. Is that the Whitney brothers?
No, the Conrad brothers. Tony Conrad. Tony Conrad's stroboscopic film. And Dan Conrad's After Image film.
Oh, I don't know Dan Conrad at all.
They're brothers.
Okay, yeah. Tony Conrad over here. The Flicker film.
Yes, yes. Dan Conrad also built a color organ. Oh. And he gives, you know, he does live improvisations on a screen with his color organ. Yeah. I also saw, I mean, I guess that the one that I may remember the most seeing in the 60s is Brackage.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I decided that the work of the Conrad brothers was, it was technically important. I mean, I was very, very impressed with the video of Flicker. But, I mean, the whole business was basically dormant for me because I guess, you know, I did not have an actual stance at that time. I was just sort of observing whatever was thrown at me, you know. And obviously, it remained a curiosity, a mere curiosity. Then, in the last few years, a friend of mine twisted my arm and got me to watch 2001, the commercial film. And what that has is some of the slit screen work of Trumbull, as I later discovered that that's what it was. I later found out that that's what it was. And that gave me, you know, a completely new angle on it. I mean, I just had no idea. I mean, I had to be shown, you know, but that abstract cinema could go there. And the first thing that I did was to cut out the Trumbull bits from 2001 and sort of string them together to make a pilot project just for my own edification. I mean, the first thing that I did, my title for it is Rushing It, Rushing It. It is a pilot project. I mean, I can't claim authorship, but I was trying to educate my own sensibility, you know, in other words, my own idea of what the aims of this medium should be. And then I did another similar experiment also using, I think it was Trumbull clips from, there's some commercial film named Altered States, I believe, and but I just cut clips out of that, you know, and I edited that up as a separate item, a pilot project. And the purpose of all of this, as I say, was to educate myself about what is possible here. And then, after I'd done that, I had the opportunity to make films at the New Media Center at Princeton University. And this was all done, you know, at a computer screen. I mean, the technology, of course, has changed tremendously, and it sort of made it possible for me to enter the picture at this point. Whereas in the old sort of celluloid days, you sort of had to have acquire all this clunky machinery and so forth and so on. And my lifestyle, I wasn't really interested in that at all. And I mean, the ways of actually encoding, you know, film. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were nothing like what, you know, digital work provides. So, at that point, after I made my own films, which are called Shrine of the Insect and My Paisley Eyes, those are the two titles of the films that I made at Princeton.
When was this?
It might have been 2006.
Oh. And what did you do you shoot on anything, or do you, are you actually making it in the computer itself?
I may take images like microphotographs or something like that, and it may involve transforming those, but also creating images, you know, in one of the applications. We were going back and forth. I was working with an engineer, and we were going back and forth between all of these methods. Then, looking back on it, I would say that abstract cinema is a total failure. I mean, there are a few works that I respect. I mean, I've mentioned the Conrad brothers. I've mentioned Trumbull. It is possible that I would like Sharrett's color sound frames, but there was no way for me to see it. It was not available. I mean, even somebody as important as John Henhart. John Henhart. I mean, he couldn't tell me how to go about seeing it. I mean, I'm not even sure that color sound frames is the film that I think that I like. But I mean, I'm under the impression that Sharrett's did a color strobe film.
He did several, yeah.
Okay.
Like the stream sectioned. He did various word films as well.
I'm talking about specifically a color strobe film.
Right. Axiomatic granularity was one.
Well, we'll talk about that later, you know, but at any rate, I mean, just the fact that I could not even see it in order to ascertain whether it was the film that I thought it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a total failure in regard to distribution. Yeah. I mean, the technology and the distribution are so clumsy or non-existent. Yeah. It's a failure in that sense. It's also a failure that, by and large, no abstract film became memorable. I mean, Flickr is one of the very few, maybe, that is known, you know, outside of the small circle of, you know.
He made two, didn't he? There was a Flickr film, and then he made one with his wife, Beverly Cameron.
Well, Flickr has a soundtrack. But he made a lot of films. I mean, he became known as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And I mean, he, as a professor of media studies at the State University of New York.
Yeah.
I mean, his film.
Have you seen the Peter Kubelka film? Do you know Peter Kubelka?
I know who he. Yeah. I've heard of it.
He also made a film just using black and white frames, which is a fucking film, which actually predates the Conrad one.
Oh, okay.
By a few years, but it's similar. Mm-hmm. Similar thing. It's called Arnold Freyner, which is the name of another artist, but yes. Completely. Like, you know,
okay. You'll have to. You'll have to tell me what these are, and
yeah.
I may have an opportunity to check them out. But I'm drawing a conclusion. I've already mentioned, you know, a few that I like, or that I would say that even influenced me.
Right.
But by and large, I mean, I think that the content, I mean, they did not know what they had or what they have. And I just find the content to be fatuous, by and large. I mean, ranging from the, you know, the utterly boring to Brackage. I mean, his gimmick is fragmentation. I mean, so, you know, you end up with a lot of visual noise to no purpose. And I just find all this completely fatuous. I mean, this is why it sort of escaped my attention the first time around. I had to see, you know, Trumbull's slit screen work to become convinced that there is something there that is important. So, I'm not going to launch into a long sort of film-by-film critique, you know. But, I mean, another thing was there was a lot of work that was sort of a run up to iTunes or something like that. I mean, in other words, like the soundtrack sort of dominated the film, and the visuals, John Whitney, you know, and the visuals would just jump around in a geometric way, you know, and supposedly illustrate the soundtrack. Or Mary Boot, if I have her name correctly. Yeah. Yes, she did work like that.
Yeah.
Complete waste of time as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. What about the early people like Oscar Fishing, sort of Germans,
you know, 1920s? Yes, even worse as far as I'm concerned. Well, Moholy Nagy made an abstract film.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just gimmicks. I mean, they're just people who just realize that it is possible to make an abstract film. I mean, all that they prove is that it is possible to make an abstract film. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, they didn't know what they had, and they didn't know what they ought to be doing.
How do you think, in what sense?
You have not seen the pilot projects that I made out of the commercial clips. And, of course, you haven't seen my own films. But just from the pilot projects, you know, the film attacks the eye. You know, human vision, it has a potential which is not explored under normal circumstances. I mean, for me, abstract cinema is colors moving on a plane. That's what it is. It happens to be bounded in a rectangle. And I'm actually in favor of standard formats. I think that there is, so to speak, a great advantage in standard formats. I have seen, you know, optical experiments by artists, which are not, you know, films, which are not, you know, projected on a plane or something like that. They're done in other ways. They're quasi-kaleidoscopic and so forth. And they have turning wheels and all sorts of devices, you know, and so forth. And then, of course, there is 3D film and so forth and so on. I don't really find that necessary. I mean, I think that the standard format allows a very great deal. And it also, when you're working with a standard format, it has the advantage of throwing individuality into much sharper relief. Since it's like everybody is playing the same keys. So if they manage to create a completely different style or a completely different sensibility, it's even more obvious. So just with colors moving on a plane, I mean, vision is such that you can make the eye see all sorts of things that are not there. And you can also give the viewer the sensation of being in motion relative to the screen, or of even being bounced up and down. I mean, just by the images that you're, you know, these very active images that you're projecting. It's a possibility of vision that, you know, doesn't normally come out. I think that it is, roughly speaking, that it is those kinds of opportunities combined with enshrine of the insect, some of this sort of these found images, you know, that I'm modifying to make the film.
So both of these films employ footage from these previous, or are these two?
No, completely separate. Completely separate. Okay. No, the found images are microphotographs and so forth and so on.
Okay.
I mean,
were these
we happen to know a biologist who gave us an entire disc of microphotographs, for example.
Right.
I mean, it is not only the optical illusion. But I mean, the optical illusion is very important in my work. I mean, but it is also possible to have images that are remarkably intricate. It is also possible to have images that are very elusive. I mean, there's a clip or a series of clips in my second film, which people refer to as the Two Bloody Coffins. And which seem to be, like either falling down the side of a building or then we reverse it and one falls down the side of the building while the other falls up the side of the building. I mean, they're not actual coffins. It's elusive, if that's the word that I want. In other words, it may connote this, you know, without actually, you know, without being this. I mean, it is actually abstract.
Right.
But I do work with, I work with suggestive imagery, with imagery that uses a great deal of color and that is very intricate. And so, I mean, all of this is coming together, but, you know, like, for me, the purpose of abstract cinema should be, you know, through the portal of vision, it should be consciousness expansion. It should be it should be a path to an exalted consciousness.
Is that, so it's similar in a way to your music?
Yes.
Right.
Mm. Except that the paths are actually very different because my music is ethnic based, completely. I mean, you know, the American term is roots, and my music is all about roots, even though I take the material and, as you know, I mean, I take it somewhere that, if we may say, a pop, you know, a pop performer would never take it, or they would never make the kind of pastiche that I make, you know, with like Indian and funky country and, you know, and this and that and the other thing, a little bit of East European, you know, and all of it, you know, sort of coming together.
Yeah.
Would
you call it sort of trance music almost? Would that be fair to say that you were in, almost induced?
There are, you may be talking about the so-called shout-out, the coda from the other night.
Right.
Yes, yes, the long section of repetition.
Yeah.
That is supposed to, yes, that is supposed to go in that direction. At the same time, it's supposed to be sort of very, sort of, you know, pleasurable to listen to.
It gets to a point where you almost don't want it to end. You kind of been thinking, well, this could just go on.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, it's wonderful that you say that because I also saw a few people walk out.
Well, yeah.
Yes, yes. But you got it. Okay, that you got it. Yes, I mean, you get to a point where you say, this doesn't ever have to end.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my whole idea is I want the, you know, the audience to start wondering if they're going to get out of here alive.
Yeah. Now, the person I was with as well, she was really starts to get into it towards the end. She's really
yes.
saying, you know, that it works really
yes.
well and it's
yes.
just going to go on and on
yes.
and on and on.
Yes.
And it comes as a complete, you suddenly make this gesture.
What
yes.
What I actually do is that I play a sign off.
Right.
I play a sign off, and at the end, all the sound is cut, and you just have, you know, where it was before it was quite loud, you know, quite loud and quite rhythmic. You're just left with nothing.
Right.
I mean, that's a very carefully calculated. I mean, I call that technique silent shock.
Okay. And you on one you're looking at you have sheet music or notation.
Yes. It's all written.
I couldn't
yes.
see the front of the other thing. Was it a clock?
Like, yes.
Is it the round
yes.
object, which I couldn't see.
Yes, it was a clock. Yes, it was a clock.
Okay.
Yes, yes, I am using the clock to sort of pace me.
Right.
To pace me through the different sections. Mm-hmm. Yes, courtesy of John Cage.
Right.
Yes, yes. I mean, I don't know. He might not be very happy to think that he had a hand in any such thing as this. You know, but I mean, the whole idea is to sort of steal from everybody, you
yeah.
know.
And then make it your own.
And make it your own.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that was an interview with Henry Flint, conducted on the 20th of October. Henry Flint was the sort of founder of, he coined the term concept art. And was a at the time of Fluxus, when with George McCunis, he was a sort of Trotskyist political advisor, I suppose, to George McCunis, and organized various demonstrations against the Lincoln Center and Stockhausen and musical imperialism and so on. For the last 30 years, he's been developing his own brand of avant-garde hillbilly music, and we're going to play out with such a track from Back Porch Hillbilly Blues, Henry Flint Volume 2, and this track is called White Lightning. Well, I'm going to interrupt myself there. Yes, that was from 2008. Henry Flint, who's well worth visiting his website, where various controversial theories around arithmetic and art. And anyway, as he said, well, as I said before I interrupted myself, we're going to play some more Henry Flint tracks and some Tony Conrad tracks, starting, in fact, not with White Lightning, as we did then, but this is Henry Flint and Nova Billy, and this track is called Conga. Henry Flint from Nova Billy, 1975. With Henry Flint on violin and guitar, Jim McAllister guitar, Paul Collin on saxes, Peter Gordon keyboards, Don Christensen piano and drums, Timothy Bear drums, and Larry Bennett Fender bass. So they're going to play two more tracks from this album because they both the next two tracks feature Henry Flint's vocals. And the first one is called I Was a Creep. ¶¶
Thank you.
those were Henry Flint from Nova Billy, recorded in 1975. And the last two tracks featured Henry Flint on vocals as well as violin. Okay, so he mentioned during his talk on Abstract Film, he mentions Tony Conrad. So I'm going to play some Tony Conrad, quite a long track. Tony Conrad and Alexandria Galencia, recorded live in Austin, Texas in 1999. This is a sort of 10-inch vinyl record on the Lactimos label. And then after that, that should give us probably another 10 minutes or so to play perhaps some Back Porch Hillbilly Blues from Henry Flint.
Thank you.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.